Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Uganda has declared an Ebola outbreak after health authorities confirmed the case of the relatively rare Sudan strain. A 24-year-old man in Uganda's central Mubende district showed symptoms and later died. There are currently 8 suspected cases receiving care in a health facility. There have been 7 previous outbreaks of the Ebola Sudan strain, 4 in Uganda and 3 in Sudan, according to the WHO Africa region. Monkeypox and COVID-19 have raised awareness around the world of zoonotic diseases that are passed between animals and human beings. The Ugandan government has built a laboratory that tracks zoonotic diseases in national parks where many communities live close to a wide variety of wildlife.
Inside the park at Mweya is this newly commissioned Uganda Wildlife Authority Diagnostics and Research Laboratory. The first of its kind in the region, the facility monitors incidents and acts as an early warning system for the transference of zoonotic infections. Sam Mwanda is the executive director of the Uganda Wildlife Authority.
Our ability to actually pick samples and test samples for diseases was limited. Very often, if we were not able to get support from the UVRI, the Uganda Virus Research Institute in Entebbe, we would have to ship these samples abroad to be able to determine what disease we have. So working with our partners from the US called DITRA, they offered to help us construct a biosafety level 2 laboratory that is constructed in Mweya. That laboratory is now operational.
The outbreaks of COVID-19 and monkeypox have raised concern among scientists about the recurrence of zoonotic diseases that are passed between animals and humans. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says more than half of all human infections, such as malaria, Ebola, and SARS, are zoonotic in origin. The new laboratory tracks zoonotic diseases in national parks where many communities live close to a wide variety of wildlife.
So the capability of this lab is currently in 3 forms. One, we can do diagnosis. 2, we can do forensics. We are developing a pipeline for forensics, especially for wildlife. And then we do research. And when we do research in bacterial pathogens, protozoan pathogens. We do research in viral pathogens as well.
The laboratory has been busy since opening its doors a few months ago.
The burden in wildlife tends to cascade to the livestock and then cascades to the human beings. Like for example, a tourist died due to Marburg in a python cave. So we are doing a study to follow up on those bats to see how far do they move from the cave to the villages so that we can sensitize those people that these bats, despite them coming to your village, they are carrying a given disease that might be detrimental to your health.
Experts say as growing populations spill over onto previously undisturbed areas of wildlife, the risk of transmission of infections between animals and humans increases. They say 3 out of every 4 new or emerging infectious diseases in people come from animals.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, several provinces are affected by the monkeypox outbreak. More than 2,000 cases have been recorded in the country, according to the National Monkeypox Control Program. A vaccine trial is underway in the country along with other measures to contain the virus. Here is a story by Alex Kataye in Kinshasa.
Dr. Placide Mbala is an epidemiologist at the National Institute of Biomedical Research in Kinshasa. He's part of the team working on monkeypox. Here, he outlines the history of this viral disease.
The virus itself was first detected in 1958 in Denmark, and the first human case was first identified in the DRC in 1970. And since then, there have been sporadic outbreaks of monkeypox, whether in the DRC or in other countries such as the Republic of Congo, the Central African Republic, Liberia, Nigeria, and other countries in Central and West Africa.
Since its appearance in the DRC, monkeypox has become endemic. It is prevalent in the forest regions and those neighboring the Congo Basin. According to the World Health Organization, monkeypox is generally transmitted to humans through close contact with an infected person or an animal or with material contaminated with the virus. The affected person can develop the disease within 2 to 4 weeks after being infected.
Afterwards, you really have a sign which is very characteristic. It is a swelling of lymph nodes, which is often located in the cervical lymph nodes, and which can even give complications such as abscesses in these lymph nodes. Then we have skin lesions that initially appear as macules, which progress to papules, which become scabs.
The Ministry of Health's National Monkeypox Control Program says a vaccine is currently being tested in the DRC.
There is a vaccine that has been tested. This is the Invermine vaccine, which is a vaccine already licensed in the United States of America and approved by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practice. It is being tested here with us in the DRC, and at the appropriate time by the competent authority, the conclusions will be given to you in connection with preventive measures.
Until the vaccine is approved by the WHO, prevention is done through awareness messages in endemic regions. It is strongly advised not to come into contact with animals thought to be carriers of monkeypox, such as monkeys, rats, squirrels, and others. Since the resurgence of monkeypox in 10 provinces of the DRC, there have been more than 2,200 reported cases and nearly 100 deaths. That is according to the Ministry of Health.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. The WHO reports that cases of monkeypox globally have fallen in recent weeks by more than a quarter. Over 45,000 people have been infected with monkeypox in nearly 100 countries. Experts say a combination of effective public health measures, behavior change, and vaccination are helping to prevent transmission. Africa has not received a supply of monkeypox vaccine. Only small amounts have been available for research purposes, according to Dr. Matshidiso Moeti, WHO's Africa director. For more insight, I spoke with Professor Dimi Ogoina, Professor of Medicine, Infectious Disease at the Niger Delta University, and asked his thoughts on vaccine access inequality and his findings on the possible sexual transmission of monkeypox.
A very unusual outbreak, and that's why it has been declared a public health emergency of international concern. I say it's unusual because monkeypox for over 50 years is a disease that is known to be restricted to countries in Western Central Africa. And if you look at the number of cases that have been reported, apart from the DRC, fewer than 100 cases have been reported on a yearly basis across most parts of West Africa. And we have even decades of not reporting a case. But since May 2022, we have an unprecedented number of cases being reported in over 90 countries of the world. And it's very, very unusual that it's occurring amongst mainly gay and bisexual men across the globe. And even in Africa, the number of cases are also increasing. So that makes it very unusual.
So when you talk about being unusual, you talk about the number of cases that we are seeing globally. What about the way it's being spread? People are saying it's not sexually transmitted. Some experts are saying maybe it is. And this is something that you touched on years ago when you published a research in the PLOS journal. Can you talk to us about this issue of sexual transmission?
So in 2017, we made an observation in our hospital where we observed that the first set of cases that came to our hospital were male, young men. They had background high-risk sexual behavior. They had high frequency of genital ulcers. And that made us to suspect the role of sexual contact in the transmission of monkeypox. So when in 2022, we started observing these cases among gay and bisexual men who equally had high-risk sexual behavior, specifically multisexual partners, condomless casual sex, use of recreational drugs during sex, and other high-risk sexual behavior, it became a bit something that we'll say that compared to what we saw in 2017. Recently in 2022, from my own center too, we have also observed a few of our cases are heterosexual casual sexual partners also becoming infected with human monkeypox. So on account of this, one can say that monkeypox is a sexually transmissible infection. I believe it's a sexually transmissible infection, but that's not the only route of transmission. It may not be the major route of transmission, even in Africa. But certainly in the global north, from what we are seeing, the infection is largely transmitted via sexual route or sexual contact.
Could it be because the virus itself is transmitted through close contact that we see this trend? Is there another indication that will confirm that there is sexual transmission? For example, finding the virus in the sperm of a man or other kind of indications?
Yeah, so I think this is where we need to get our definitions right. And what is the definition of a sexually transmitted infection? If I remember correctly, a sexually transmitted infection is an infection that is predominantly transmitted via sexual contact or sexual activity, with or without transmission via genital secretions. And if we're having a situation where majority of those infected in the global north are getting their infection from sexual contact or from a sexual activity, then this disease could be referred to as a sexually transmitted infection. But beyond that, a few of the studies have shown that the virus has been isolated in genital secretions, more specific in semen. And even one study that was recently published that showed that the virus, viable virus, infectious virus, was isolated close to 16 days after the infection. Although this is just one study, and that study is not necessarily confirmatory. This is just a few of the studies that are showing that the virus is also present in genital secretions. There are a number of other studies have been done that have found out that the virus was detected in a rectal swab of patients that were likely asymptomatic. And even in my own cohort, that cases I've seen in my own center, there are a few persons that develop monkeypox without skin lesions, but following a sexual activity. And what we propose in that paper is that is it possible that the transmission occurred from genital secretions or from respiratory droplets due to the close contact that occurs during a sexual activity. But there are still many unknowns. But epidemiologically speaking, if we're having a situation where we're having people having monkeypox and there's a clustering amongst persons with high-risk sexual behavior and sexual activity, then I believe that it could be regarded as a sexually transmitted infection. But that's my opinion.
Dr. Ogoina, let's talk about this current outbreak and how we can trace it. In 2017, you came across an 11-year-old boy that you treated, and it seems like that case was not isolated. Talk to us about that boy compared to what we're seeing now.
Yeah, so the 11-year-old boy was referred from a private hospital to my hospital on account of a suspicion of chickenpox that was not resolving. So when he came in, it's a young boy, a pediatric department, was admitted in the pediatric department, and one of our clinicians suspected the monkeypox. I was called in as an infectious disease physician to come and corroborate the findings and also to look at the patients. And I haven't seen the patient. I felt it was monkeypox, and that's how we made the diagnosis and informed health authorities. But the following days and the following weeks, it was actually very intriguing because five members of the family of that young boy were equally infected: father, the mother, the uncle, and the younger brother. But following an inquiry, we realized that the uncle was actually the first person to be infected, a 35-year-old man. Was the first person to be infected. He even had a genital rash. And he also had the issue of sex with a commercial sex worker, a female sex worker. But other than that, he could not give a history of contact or sexual contact with somebody with skin rash. So to that extent, that young boy was not necessarily the index case, although he was the first case that was detected in the country. The index case was actually a 35-year-old young man.
So when you look at the trend of monkeypox in Africa, monkeypox has been on the continent for years. Now you look at this global public health emergency that WHO has declared and all the momentum around monkeypox. What do you say about how the outbreak is being addressed?
Yeah, so there are still a lot of unknowns about monkeypox. If you look at the global picture, putting together Africa and what is happening in the global north, it may seem as if Africa does not have sufficient cases of monkeypox. In Nigeria, for instance, this year, we reported 220 cases. Compare that to over 10,000 cases in the US, for instance, or even in the UK, where they have thousands of cases. And this just tells us that, one, there's a chance that there's underreporting of monkeypox in Africa, in many parts of Africa, on account of our weak surveillance systems and the other challenges that we have with our health system, health-seeking behavior, and the way we perceive disease and the likes. So certainly, it is my opinion that the number of cases in Africa is grossly underestimated. What it also tells us is that the increasing awareness and the attention that's been paid to monkeypox is on account of the fact that it is now a challenge for the global north, for the developed countries, because we have had monkeypox for over 50 years. It's largely a neglected disease. And Africa, we have not had access to vaccines or to therapeutics. To date, we still don't have access to our therapeutics and vaccine. That becomes a great challenge. And the fact that we still have many unknowns about monkeypox is because it was never a problem for the global north, where they have the resources, the know-how, the investment that is required to uncover the gaps and the knowledge gaps associated with monkeypox. So a lot of this has been done now. If you even go to Google's trends and look at research efforts for monkeypox, you will see that there's a significant uptick in number of publications related to monkeypox, and that's because it's a challenge for the global north. But before then, it was largely neglected.
I would like you to talk to us about this current outbreak and what do you think that can be done to contain it? Because some people are concerned about another scenario of COVID-19 when we see how it's spreading. And another scenario of COVID-19 is access to vaccine. You talked about it. Africa doesn't have one single drop of vaccine as of yet. What is your reaction?
I think this is a time for us to rethink the concept of global solidarity, what we do, because we always speak about global solidarity, but when it comes to implementation, it doesn't reflect in our actions. It seems that the concept of global solidarity is all in words. And I always say that the recognition of infectious diseases as the conditions that have no borders is very, very important. And we need to be careful about vaccine nationalism or issues of equity that relates to medical countermeasures that are related to pandemics or epidemics. We may assume that because vaccines are available to certain countries or certain regions in the world, then we are protected. But if we neglect the African countries, these pathogens will come back to haunt us. And that's why it is said that the world is a global village. Your family members are not necessarily the people close to you in your household. The way pathogens work now, your family members are very far away. So if you are caring for people, always care for people that have conditions that will prevent you from having an outbreak in the future. And that's very, very important. So I believe that the need for us to rethink the concept of global solidarity in the distribution of medical countermeasures is very, very important. In the same vein, we also need to look at research, addressing the knowledge gaps. Because if we continue this way and we don't invest in research and development for Africa, for instance, it means that solutions that will be developed will only address the problem for developed countries and not for developing countries. And that will be the trend. If the same vein for vaccines and therapeutics, clinical trials are ongoing both for therapeutics and vaccines in the developed world, and they have already deployed this, but it's not available to Africa. And it's important that we reflect what we say, the global solidarity to address this challenge of monkeypox.
So as the West is taking care of its population with vaccines and therapeutic, what do you see as the priorities in Africa to address monkeypox?
Yeah, I think the first priority is for us to ensure that we're ready. There should be a readiness assessment. It's wanting to request for vaccines or therapeutics, but are you really ready for them? So there's need for a readiness assessment. How is the health system ready to get these vaccines, to distribute them, to store them? What are the issues of vaccine hesitancy? COVID-19 is a typical example. We requested for COVID-19 vaccines for a long time. COVID-19 vaccines are largely available in Africa, but we have issues of vaccine hesitancy. In Nigeria, for instance, less than 40% of the population is fully vaccinated to COVID-19 vaccines, and the vaccines are available. So this is a time for us to look at readiness. How ready are the African countries for the monkeypox vaccines and therapeutics? Are there challenges of vaccine hesitancy? Where are we going to keep the vaccines? Who are we going to vaccinate? Because that is also not very clear. It's very clear in the global north, because you can identify the high-risk groups and then you can vaccinate them. But for Africa, who are the high-risk groups? It becomes very difficult because we still have significant knowledge gaps. So While we request for vaccines, we must ensure we are ready. Then we must also ensure we are addressing knowledge gaps. And these are things that we need to do concurrently.
So right now, how are monkeypox patients being treated, given that there is no specific treatment and the vaccine is a challenge to have access to?
Yeah, so we have been treating monkeypox patients the way we have been treating them since 2017. And I'm sure for DRC, the way they have been treating them for the last 30 years, and it's mainly supportive care. We will say we're lucky because monkeypox is largely a self-limiting illness. But I always put a caution there. We're having situations where people with HIV infection are having severe manifestation of monkeypox, and a substantial number of them are dying on account of HIV monkeypox co-infection. And we know that HIV is still a problem in Africa, especially as most people are not on antiretroviral therapy or have stopped their antiretroviral therapy. And so that's an area we need to look at. And that's why I believe it is more or less urgent for this therapeutic to be made available to Africa. But what we're doing currently is mainly supportive care. So when patients come in, we treat their illness, we treat their symptoms, we treat their signs, and most of our patients have been doing well.
So when you have a patient who has HIV or another condition that weakens their immune system, what do you focus on? Do you focus on treating monkeypox, or you treat that disease? How does this work?
Yeah, so we treat both conditions concurrently. Unfortunately, most of the patients that have co-infections of HIV and monkeypox come up with severe complications. Some come with encephalitis, some come with bacterial sepsis, and other sorts of manifestations. We even had one patient that had a severe bronchopneumonia. And so we need to treat both conditions concurrently. And this typical situation that will require therapeutics because that will hasten the resolution of the patient and as well promote recovery and reduce levels of mortality associated with the disease. So what we do is to treat both conditions concurrently.
I want to go back to when you mentioned the sexual transmission. You also talk about the fact that you were told not to talk about it. If you can just give us a sense of that experience, and what does it tell you in terms of the way public health is being handled?
Well, I wouldn't say I blame the people that said that completely. Again, to put a context to it, the time we made that observation in 2017, nobody would have ever thought that monkeypox would be transmitted via sexual contact. The traditional knowledge there was that monkeypox was transmitted via animals, and household contacts were predisposed from respiratory droplets. So nobody ever thought that monkeypox would be transmitted via sexual contact. And in that meeting, when I made that presentation and said there's a chance that monkeypox to be transmitted via sexual contact, it was a scientific gathering, and I was opposed. And I was opposed on the basis of the fact that it was not previously known to be transmitted by sexual contact. That was one. Secondly, the information we gave was that because we had high rates of genital ulcers, we were suspecting sexual contact. And the people at the other side felt that genital ulcers or genital rash were also common before now, even from animal exposure. So that's not a good reason to attribute it to sexual contact. That's the second reason. The third reason that they had a different view was that we only reported in a few patients, because at the time we made this report, we had just about 21 patients or so in my center that we shared this experience. And so that's why I said I didn't look at it as being unusual. It was an scientific environment and people had to probe what we presented. So there were divergent views, because I haven't done that. I made the presentation in another national meeting. People had divergent views about what we presented. I'm not even too sure that even to date, people are still very convinced that monkeypox in Africa has sexual roots or sexual contact as a mode of transmission. I'm not too sure, because there are still a lot of doubts. But this is an area that we need to explore further, because there's significant knowledge gap there.
And before we wrap, Professor Ogoina, a lot of people are concerned. They don't want to see another COVID-19 spread of the disease. What is your message to people who are concerned?
I think the message is to say that we ought to be very vigilant, very alert about our health. And the responsibility we have for our health is our responsibility. It's not the responsibility of the public health authorities. It's not the responsibility of somebody else or of another country. That's the same thing that I say about Africa. We should not wait for the developed world to bring solutions to us, to bring interventions. We must take up our responsibility and ensure that we do what is needed to address our problems. And the other second thing I want to highlight here is that monkeypox is largely a self-limiting illness. It's not likely to kill you, except for some patients that have HIV infection, are not taking medication, have significant immunosuppression, depression for some other reason, they are at risk of having severe disease that may result in death. So we should not be alarmed. We should not panic. We should not spread falsehood. We should remain vigilant. And if we suspect we have features suggestive of monkeypox, or our close ones have features suggestive of monkeypox, let us report to the nearest health authorities for appropriate attention.
Professor Dimi Ogoina, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
That was Professor Dimi Ogoina, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases in Niger Delta University. Breast milk is a source of nutrition for babies, but not every mother can produce their own milk. In order to ensure that newborns, especially premature babies whose mothers have difficulty breastfeeding, have access to this, the Maputo Central Hospital in Mozambique created the Maternal Milk Bank. It's the only one in the country.
Here at the Maputo Central Hospital is the first and only breast milk bank in Mozambique, created to meet the growing demand of breast milk for premature newborns. The milk donated here is given to babies whose mothers do not produce enough of their own milk or who are unable to breastfeed. Yolanda Langa has been donating her breast milk for over a month. Despite her busy work routine, she is always trying to find time to help.
I know how important milk is for a newborn. It's something that only we, mothers, can give, and I felt compelled to come and donate milk to babies who are in need, possibly because their mothers may have died or have insufficient milk production.
She says she feels a sense of pride and relief being able to nurture other children besides her own, and invites other lactating mothers to join the cause.
I hope they come here and donate because it's something we constantly produce. And there are a lot of mothers who end up not being able to breastfeed for one reason or another. It is a precious liquid that could save a child's life. So let's donate it. It doesn't hurt, and the more we donate, the better.
The specialists here say there are certain requirements that must be met for the donation.
First, the donor must be breastfeeding. She must have a baby and be breastfeeding. She must have been tested, and the test results must be negative for HIV, hepatitis B, and syphilis. These are the three mandatory tests and must be done before starting the milk donation.
Madalena Balati, a nutritionist at the milk bank in Maputo Central Hospital, explains how the process works.
When the milk arrives from the donors, we bring it to this room where the pasteurization takes place. Pasteurization is the process of eliminating any bacteria and viruses by heating it up to 62.5 degrees Celsius for 45 minutes. Then we test the milk to make sure it's suitable for consumption.
Workers here say during the coronavirus pandemic, donations dropped because some mothers were afraid to go to the hospital. So they started a home collection service.
Instead of donors coming here to the milk bank to donate milk, we go to their homes. We create a schedule based on their availability and then go out at the scheduled time to collect the milk.
The director of the milk bank says on average, they collect about 25 liters per month.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudo, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, stay well and strive to make every day a healthy day.
World leaders gather in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Count on VOA to be there, delivering news you can trust on radio, TV, and the web. A free press is essential. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information. This is Heidi Adams, host of Straight Talk Africa. Join me to explore what is now and what is next for African society, culture, and politics. We'll go behind the headlines to analyze the news and emerging trends shaping Africa today.